1888.
Surrounded by lots of men and women in white coats, that would be doctors to you and me. President Obama still pitching health care reform. We have the details coming up. In the meantime, the White House is saying no Afghanistan pullout for now. And roll up your sleeves, ready or not, the first doses of the H1N1 vaccine have arrived. Will you take the shot? There are a lot of people that are saying they do not want it. In fact, I had an interesting conversation today about it, both in New York and in California. I'll fill you in on the details. People have been told or suggested, kind of pushed in the direction of, you might want to think about this, refusing to take the shot when it becomes available. Kate Delaney, America Tonight. You know how we roll on this show, coast to coast and everywhere in between. Excited about our guest coming up in another 10 minutes talking about Afghanistan. He served in Iraq, Michael Anthony. He was a medic there. Could not believe the things that he saw while he was deployed, a living hell. And he'll give us the description of that, obviously, and what he went through and what he learned from that experience. But first, let's get back to Afghanistan. The White House is saying, no, we're not going to pull out. There isn't a timetable anywhere flying around this office, whether it's in our heads or it's somewhere in a secret, secret place. The president is saying we are not walking away from this, even though there is this intense debate over choices as to what to do. This on the heels of that awful Taliban attack that we described yesterday to you. Remember, 8 American soldiers dead over the weekend, just bombarded for 12 hours with rocket fire and machine gun fire, and anything you can imagine was heaped upon them from Taliban that were nestled in the mountaintops and also in a mosque as well that could reach this U.S. outpost where they were stretched pretty thin. The Americans were battling the insurgents, and certainly this would underscore the need for a decision. Are we moving ahead? What is the end game? Do we really want to deploy up to 40,000 more troops? And what about the cost of this war? I care more about the human lives and the sacrifices that American families are making, but there is also a dollar cost on this. For now, Robert Gates, the defense secretary, is saying, listen, we all just need to take a chill pill and let the president decide on this one. But not everybody is in agreement. In fact, an interesting interview that I happened to catch with Peter Galbraith, he was one of the top American diplomats at the United Nations in Afghanistan. Now, last week, the United Nations Secretary General fired him, if you remember. Why? Because he was accusing his boss at the UN mission in Afghanistan and a couple of others of helping to cover up electoral fraud and also of being incredibly biased in favor of Hamid Karzai. So he set off a firestorm, if you will, over how much money was spent on those elections, and can you really trust who was elected? So one of the first things Galbraith was asked in the interview that I happened to see on ABC was, look, should we leave Afghanistan? And here's what he said.
If you were advising the president this morning, would you tell him to ramp up now or that it's a losing battle?
Neither. But in the absence of having a credible Afghan partner, that is to say, a government that is enjoys the support of the people and is accepted by those that did not vote for the man who emerges as president, it makes no sense to ramp up. On the other hand, we cannot afford to pull out.
All right, and so along those lines, you got the Taliban and what just happened to the 8 American soldiers who were killed. So what if there was a pullout? What exactly would happen with the Taliban?
Cannot afford to pull out because cannot afford letting the Taliban come in with all their brutalities once again?
That is one point. The Taliban would take over the southern part of the country. It's almost taken over the second largest city in Kandahar. And frankly, over the past 8 years, the United States and its allies have made an enormous investment in Afghanistan. And we have some obligations to the people of that country that we don't let it descend into the kind of chaos that characterized the country in the 1990s.
All right, so we can't let it, Peter Galbraith says, we can't let it descend into putting it back to where it was, in other words, if we were to completely pull out of the situation. Now, we know we've already spent 8 years in Afghanistan, Pete. So now you heap on at least another 10. That's 18 years. When the battlefield is left or that terrain is left behind, is the Taliban completely smoked out for the most part? Are the people living somewhat in a democratic lifestyle, and can the soldiers who have watched their friends be blown apart in battle, can they leave holding their head high knowing, my God, man, we brought these people freedom, we shake loose the Taliban, we shook them loose, and we're coming back with our heads held high. Ultimately, he wraps this up nicely with Diane Sawyer.
All right, let's talk about how you get a credible partner in the Afghan government. You have written a piece which has everyone talking this morning about the fact that you think as many as 30% of the votes in that election were faked, that in Kandahar alone, you're talking about 10 times the number of votes counted as you believe were cast. There is talk of an audit and the results this Friday, a possible runoff. Will an audit and then a runoff at least begin the process of credible government?
Well, it is essential to have an election in which the people have confidence. So the international community, mostly the United States, spent $300 million on these elections, and they have been a fiasco. They have made the situation much worse. As you noted, they were characterized by massive fraud, mostly in the South, mostly people votes recorded in polling stations where nobody actually voted. Once the fraud has taken place, it's very hard to undo it. There is a process underway. We hope that that will be able to undo at least some of the damage in a way that Afghans will have confidence in the process. And if it ends up with a runoff, that the runoff can be conducted fairly. But, of course, that means it will have to be done differently than how the election on August 20th was done.
All right, so you heard the total, $300 million for an election that's completely bogus, where Karzai, in his opinion and others' opinions, of course, he was muzzled by getting fired, but in a sense, but where other people in the international community feel the same way. Thus, this is part of the problem in Afghanistan. So here's the other deal. It's just a waiting game for the president. And in the meantime, there is a push by many in Congress to hear some testimony from General McChrystal to get some more details on what's going on in Afghanistan other than what they have leaked out in the Washington Post or bits and pieces of reports that some of the Congress people have heard about from the Pentagon or the little tidbits, the little kaleidoscope they might have seen during 60 Minutes of McChrystal and what he's doing over there and things that really anyone could have seen across the United States. So one of the things that Gates is saying, the Secretary of Defense, is no way. He's done a great job. There is no way that he has to testify before Congress until the president has decided on a policy because it puts him in an impossible situation. Ooh, the tug of war has begun. Michael Anthony coming up next. He's written a book called Mass Casualties. You won't want to miss it. Stay with us.
Toxins are in our foods, and chemicals are in our air. Chemicals are in our water supply. We purify our air and we purify our water, and yet we forget to purify our bodies. Funny, our bodies continue to absorb these deadly toxins and chemicals every day. Isn't it time to make a change? Maybe a life change? Get rid of toxins and chemicals. Get the tea.com. Log on to getthetea.com and order your protection today. Our testimonies tell the truth. Getthetea.com. Or you can call us at 928-308-0408. That's 928-308-0408. cleanse from toxins and chemicals, lose some weight, and get free from unhealthy living. Order today at GetTheTea.com.
Why are you letting that search engine spy on you?
Spy on me?
Yeah. Don't you know Google, Yahoo, and other search engines record all your searches and store them in a giant database? You should use StartPage instead.
StartPage?
Yeah, StartPage.com, the new name for Ixquick, the world's most private search engine. They don't record your searches or your IP address, and the search results are great. Plus, StartPage is third-party certified, and it's totally free.
I don't want Big Brother watching what I do on the internet. I'm adding StartPage to my browser.
Right. Go to StartPage.com and start searching with privacy.
Hello, folks. This is Alex Jones. There are some habits you need to break if you want to hold on to your privacy. That's why I'm inviting you to take the one-week StartPage challenge. The next time you're about to look something up on Google, Yahoo, or Bing, go to StartPage.com instead. Try 7 days of StartPage and break the Big Brother habit. Do yourself and your privacy a favor. Try StartPage.com for 7 days and start protecting your privacy. That's StartPage.com.
If you owe the IRS, you can't make the problem go away without professional help. But with the help of Dan Pilla, you can get your problem solved.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla, and I've been solving tax debt problems for 30 years, and I can help you too. We can stabilize IRS collection action and get your tax debt reduced, sometimes completely eliminated. And if you received a 1099 from a bank because of mortgage or other debt forgiveness, the vast majority of the time, I can show you how to completely erase it so you pay no taxes on what the IRS will consider to be taxable income. Call us for a free consultation to discuss the many possibilities. Call 1-800-34-NO-TAX. That's 800-34-NOTAX. Or go to my website at taxhelponline.com.
Dan Pilla has been protecting taxpayers from the IRS for 3 decades, and he can help you. Call us today, 800-346-6829. That's 800-34-NO-TAX.
Here on America Tonight, a pleasure to welcome to the show Michael Anthony. And here is a guy who, before we jump into this, at 18 years old, okay, and you think of being 18, have to think of when I'm 18, and he enlisted at 17, came from a family where, again, we tip our cap to them, military family, so many had served, and he decided he wanted to do that too. So he continues down that path, that long tradition of service to the country. Then he, at 18 years old, goes to Iraq. He's in a medical unit. Can you imagine some of the things that Michael Anthony saw while he was in Iraq? And he's written a terrific book called Mass Casualties, A Young Medic's True Story of Death, Deception, and Dishonor in Iraq. Michael Anthony, thanks so much for coming on to the show. We appreciate you, and we appreciate your service.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Kate. Thanks for having me.
All right, do we have some applause from that lame studio audience in Minneapolis? You got a Michael, they're exhausted because the Vikings beat Green Bay 30-23, so they've all lost their voices. They've gone crazy in Minneapolis. All right, take us through, first of all, take us through what happened. As I said, you came from a family that served the country, a long history of military service, so I imagine this was kind of ingrained in you that it was something you wanted to do, right?
Oh, yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think at that point when it was coming time to make that decision, it was no longer, you know, if I was going to join. It was just basically what branch of the service was it going to be. You know, I had brothers in the Air Force, the Marines, and the Army at that point. So it was, like I said, it was really just a question of what service was it going to be once the time came to leave the nest, I suppose.
And so what, I mentioned that you enlisted at 17. take us on the journey from there. What happened then? You did basic, obviously, and got deployed.
Okay. Well, I actually didn't get deployed until I was 20. Mm-hmm. I'd enlisted when I was 17, and then I was in the reserves, and then I, you know, went through that reserve process for a few months, and then once I graduated high school, I went to training for about a year, and then I came back for a year, and that's when we got deployed for 17 months. And that was basically the whole process. There was, you know, school, training for a year, back for a year, gone for, you know, 17 months, and then came back home and wrote the book.
And so obviously you felt compelled to put on the pages what you saw, and I mentioned the title, talking about death, deception, dishonor in Iraq. When you say deception, what kind of things did you see as somebody who was part of a medical unit?
Well, for instance, I can give one example of when newspapers did articles on us, and we found just things that in these newspapers that were just totally false and pure yellow journalism. And one of the facts was the articles came out, and to us in Iraq, the article was a joke. People started passing around parody articles and satire articles, making fun of all these paper articles that were being written about us. And it was just so sad to see all the people back home reading about these articles and thinking that this is the truth, and then us have it just be a big joke.
And in saying that, so what it was it a cover-up for some of this, when you say yellow journalism, a cover-up from some of the real things that you actually witnessed and saw, right, some of the horrors?
Oh, I mean, absolutely. I mean, it made it sound like it was a picnic over there. And that's one of the reasons I decided to, you know, really write the book, because I think too many times there's books and movies out there that paint this romanticized, heroic ideal of this American soldier that can do no wrong. And what I wanted to do was basically paint a picture of the American soldier as a human. I mean, if you look, for example, say the Rambo movies, you know, Rambo comes back from the war and he's got PTSD, but yet he still manages to save a city, get a girl, and do all these great things. But in, you know, real life, soldier comes back from the war with PTSD and they kill themselves. You know, we have the highest suicide rates in 30 years, and more veterans have killed themselves than active duty veterans have killed themselves than have been injured in Iraq and Afghanistan combined.
Yeah. When you first went over, did you have that opinion, that sort of that romanticized opinion, like you say, and then each day you would be shaken probably by the things that you saw, and you couldn't believe in comparison to things that you had heard what was you were actually witnessing? Was it like that? Did it play out like that for you?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I had four older brothers that were in the military, so for me, I was just looking up to them. You know, I'm going to go do what my brothers do, and, you know, at the same time, I was only 17, 18 at that point, so they're not going to tell me some of the, you know, the other darker side that goes on over there, you know, the drugs and the depression and PTSD and, you know, the suicides. And so going into it, I didn't know any of that. You know, I was just, you know, I had the typical movie version that everyone had. And then to expect that and then to just be given a 180, it was just, you know, it's just hard to cope with that loss of, I don't want to say loss of faith, but just that loss of something. You just lose something in you.
What was it that got you through it? What made you pull through that? Because you said 17 months, which is an incredible amount of time. How did you, Michael, how did you make it through the horrendous things that you were seeing?
I think partway through what it is working in the medical field, you got to learn how to just turn your emotions off to everything and basically not care about anything. So going into the surgery, you got to look at a patient, and you can't care if they live or die, because you're going to be dealing with good guys and bad guys, and you can't look at them differently, and you can't let your emotions or anything get in the way. So you got to turn into that methodical machine. So I think really being able to turn everything off to an extent helped me deal with everything that went on over there. And then, of course, you know, coming home, it was hard to turn it back on and lose that, you know, robotic feel to everything. But definitely over there, that's what helped me, just being able to turn off from everything and just be, I don't care, you know, whatever, they die, I die, it doesn't matter.
When, in writing this book, were you, and obviously this is part of it, as you've already mentioned, but I think it's cathartic for you, I'm sure, to put it together. It had to be that kind of a feeling for you. But are you certainly hoping to get it out there so more people realize, hey, this is really what's happening here? These are the things that aren't being talked about. This is what happened in Iraq.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, for example, you know, I've been able to talk to a lot of authors since then. I know a lot of people in the military through myself and my brothers. And one book in particular, I won't say it, but it was written about the initial invasion of Iraq. And, you know, it was a great story. It painted all the soldiers as heroes. And, you know, and they were. You know, they went out there. They did some brave and courageous things, and they were all heroes. But the book ended there. What a lot of people don't know and where the book just left off was a lot of those soldiers actually, once they returned, several of them killed themselves, several turned into drugs, and several got kicked out of the military for, you know, failing drug tests, and several killed themselves, several attempted to kill themselves. And if you look at the book, you're going to see, you know, 10 heroic figures that, I mean, these people are, you know, these are the people that the G.I. Joe film's based on. But then if you look at the reality of what happened, you know, after the book was written, after they returned home, there's got to be something missing. If everything was perfect, like the picture was painted, I mean, how could point A lead to point B? And, yeah, basically, like you said, I just wanted to fill in the gaps and explain how these things can happen in the full story picture of it, not just the things that people want to see, the things that people want to hear. I just want to paint a full picture of what goes on over there.
Yeah. Hey, we only have a minute and change left, but
okay. We've
been talking about Afghanistan. And when you see what happened in Iraq, and now the troops, a big chunk of the troops anyway, have pulled out, and they're trying to maintain their own form of government, do you think it's worth it to send 40,000 more troops to Afghanistan? Do you think that the United States, based on your feeling from being in the Middle East and Iraq, is it worth it to stay there and keep digging in for the next maybe 10 years or so?
If you look at it from a pure military standpoint, from just a pure military, all politics aside, yeah, I mean, sending more troops in there is going to work. I mean, that's the only way to win a war, to win a battle, is to win it by pure numbers and pure force. I mean, if you can look at things different ways depending on politics, but from a pure military standpoint, I mean, the only way you're going to win a war is with force and numbers.
Yeah, boy. But imagine you'll certainly be able to relate to those soldiers because you'll know exactly what they're going through, right?
Oh, yeah. I've been emailing back and forth with dozens of old veterans, new veterans, current soldiers, and just breeding and understanding.
Yeah, no kidding. Michael Anthony, good luck to you. Mass Casualties, A Young Medic's True Story of Death, Deception, Dishonor in Iraq. Get it Amazon, Barnes & Noble, of course, Borders. Michael, we'll have you back on again, and we appreciate the time, buddy.
All right, great. Thank you. Bye.
Coming up on the flip side, odds and ends here on ATN.
Are you constantly tired? Have a hard time concentrating? Experience muscle weakness or have problems with digestion? The solution may be as simple as detoxifying your body. Liquid Zeolite, available only at RestoreYourHealthNow.com, captures toxins and physically carries them out of your body. This safe and effective way of detoxifying can easily remove heavy metals and contaminants. Studies show that Liquid Zeolite captures triggering antigens which cause allergies, migraines, and asthma, decreasing the rate and severity of these symptoms. Liquid Zeolite is a tasteless and odorless liquid that, when taken daily, supports a healthy, happy, and active lifestyle in an increasingly toxic world. And Liquid Zeolite is so gentle that you won't even know you're taking it. Although your list of ailments may be endless, the solution is simple. Try Liquid Zeolite for yourself by visiting RestoreYourHealthNow.com. That's RestoreYourHealthNow.com. Or call 1-800-976-0025. That's 1-800-976-0025 today.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
If you currently owe back taxes to the IRS or state, this special announcement is for you. Tax authorities are now accepting settlements, and you can resolve your tax debt for a fraction of what you owe. If you owe $10,000 or more in back taxes, now is the time to act before it's too late. We're the Rely On Group, and our tax resolution experts are here to help you right now. Many of our tax experts are former IRS agents. They know how to legally and permanently resolve your tax problems and make sure you don't pay a dime more than you have to. Call now to immediately remove tax liens, eliminate tax penalties, and end wage garnishments.
If you owe back taxes to the IRS or state, call us for free information about how you can legally settle your tax liabilities and save thousands of dollars. Call now. 1-800-984-1944. 1-800-984-1944. 1-800-984-1944.
This is Jerry Pierce, the radio detective. Have you heard of the Millionaire Patriot? Well, you should. He has a free handgun and 5 days of firearm training waiting for you. That's right. You can attend 5 days of world-class gun training at Front Sight Firearms Training Institute and secure a 30-state concealed weapons permit, all for pennies on the dollar. Plus, if you act fast, the Millionaire Patriot will give you a free Springfield Armory XD pistol in the caliber of your choice. Now is the time you and your family need to be armed and trained to levels that exceed law enforcement and military standards. Front Sight provides such training without any boot camp mentality or drill instructor attitudes, and the Millionaire Patriot's paying his own money to help you get it. This is real. Thousands have already taken advantage of it, and you should too. Don't miss out. Secure a Front Sight defensive handgun course plus 30-state concealed weapons permit for pennies on the dollar. And get your free handgun. Go to frontsight.com today. That's FrontSight.com. Go to frontsight.com for your training and free gun.
Most people know that drinking pure high alkaline pH water is the most important factor in maintaining high energy and vibrant health. Most experts agree that the water you drink should be at a pH level of 8 or higher. AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops combine a unique formula of the most alkaline minerals. Using plasma pH drops is the best way to make your water alkaline to help you get rid of acid and regain your health and energy. Simply put 10 drops in the water you drink to raise the pH to a healthy level. Alkalizing water helps your body rid itself of acidic waste and increases the oxygen content of your body. Disease organisms like bacteria, viruses, and cancer cannot survive in an alkaline high pH environment. Order your bottle of AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops now by going directly to AlkaVision.com. That's A-L-K-A-Vision.com. Or call 269-409-1776. 269-409-1776 today.
Here. Great conversation with Michael Anthony, who served in Iraq and felt like what really happened there was never told. The drugs, the problems coming back for the guys who and women who served for so long, and then, of course, the suicides. Now, there have been, like, there's a movie called Stopgap, if you remember that one. Very good movie. The star was the kid, Ryan Phillippe, was one of the stars in that movie. But regardless, that sort of portrayed what happens and the feelings coming back and whatnot. And his book is just terrific. He's been, I know, on a lot of shows talking about that. So certainly there is a heavy price to pay. Thus, that's why the conversation of should the U.S. consider pulling out of Afghanistan. You listen to, you know, guys like Michael, and think of how badly he wanted to serve and grew up in that environment and was certainly willing to do it, and at what price. So there is a definitely more than just a monetary price, more than a political price, because this is what happens for the president, for those around the president. The decision is partially the guy wants to run for four more years. It's logical. It's anybody that would be in that spot. I'm not slamming this on Obama necessarily, because that's the way things happen when you're the president. The people around you try to get you reelected. So they honestly assess, how do people feel about this situation in Afghanistan? Ugh, gosh, do we really need to be here? Now the White House is saying that no pullout. We're not going to do this whole pullout thing, but there is no strategy that's out there at this point. And will there be 40,000 more troops that will go there to reinforce, I guess, what's going on in that very tough terrain to try to help the other guys there sort it out? Obviously, we see from that ambush, they were so thin, that was part of the problem at that one outpost. There wasn't enough soldiers. So, and that's what had to happen there. There were, eight soldiers that were ambushed and killed brutally in Afghanistan, and that's the cost of war. So, asking the question of should the United States really, really honestly, and the president, consider pulling out, it's a valid question to ask. It's not an unpatriotic thing. It's a decision as to whether or not we can let the politicians play the chess game they're playing with so many lives on the line. This is tough stuff. And you look now, and you look at the number of U.S. forces, and the recommendation is to add that number would be about 60%. So the president has to come to grips with this, has to address the nation. What's going on in Afghanistan? What's the end game? What's the why there? What's going to happen? Does this directly tie into the United States and helping the people of Afghanistan? Can we really snuff out the Taliban? Where does it all lead? What is the strategy? What is the end game? It's the same things that we've been saying all along. Now, the top three U.S. military officials, so not just General McChrystal, all favor the current fight, all say push against the Taliban. And they all concluded that they need more troops beyond the 68,000 there. It's just impossible to do it with the amount of people that are fighting this thing now. There has to be more, because you're talking about isolated strongholds, and then you've got more heavily populated areas. So how do you protect the people there? You have to win over the people, or they're going to turn on you anyway, right? So it's a fair question. Some of you are driving home now, maybe after working a shift somewhere. Maybe you're studying for a law exam. Maybe you just can't sleep. And can you imagine what the guys and the women, because there are some women involved in this, can you imagine what it's like for them day after day paying the price of this war? Which so many gallantly go off into the sunset willingly to represent their country, to stand up for their country. And I just hate the idea of coming out of this without a win, without something positive, without something that makes those people and their families feel as though the sacrifice was fully worth it. So this is a major, major decision. And my friends, you and I pay for it. If you don't pay for it with somebody you know, or somebody in your own family, or somebody down the street, somebody you care about, etc., you certainly then go to the financial factor, and lots of money is going toward fighting this war. You heard Pete Galbraith, who was booted out of the UN, basically, in a top spot. You heard him say, because he was there in Afghanistan, saying how outrageously ridiculous it was the way the elections were run. But yet the United States spent $300 million on it. So how do they spend $300 million on an election? And they don't do it right. Now you have all these cries of Karzai really isn't the guy. It's really not Hamid Karzai is the leader, because there was too much fraud and all that sort of stuff. How do you waste that much money when you know how important this election was? And we've been in Afghanistan for 8 years now, 8 and counting. It, once again, it's the blunders, it's the errors that make no sense to me. If you're invested in it, then you have to do it right. Of course, there would be some mistakes. Of course, there would be some problems. You're not going to get 100% no matter what you do. But to have it come down the way it did and all the sacrifices people have made for this country and the soldiers that we had over there that were making sure people could vote and all that other sort of stuff. I mean, ridiculous. And in the meantime, by the way, the Taliban chief is cracking jokes and saying, look for more attacks and loving this. I mean, loving the fact that they were able to nail 8 Americans. Sick. So that's exactly what you get back. I mean, there was the AP did a story, and of course, the new leader of the Pakistani Taliban was willing to talk to any media, heavily guarded, naturally. But this was just a day after, or a day before, a suicide bomber attacked a UN office in Islamabad. And Massoud met with reporters for the first time since winning control of the group and quickly, laughing and joking, like he said, squashed speculation that he had been killed in a struggle following the killing of his predecessor in a U.S. drone attack. And then he talked about his group's relationship, this is the scary part, to Al-Qaeda. He said it was one of love and affection. So naturally we know Osama bin Laden and some other top dogs for Al-Qaeda are believed to be somewhere in that remote border area in Afghanistan, possibly, of course, heavily guarded, right? And at the time, he vowed to retaliate against the United States and Pakistan for the attacks on his allies and his fighters. And, of course, we saw what happened with the 8 soldiers. And in the meantime, there was a suicide bomber disguised as a security officer who killed 5 people at a UN office in Islamabad on Monday. There was no claim of any kind of responsibility, but all signs absolutely point to the new Taliban leader. Again, for the threats of vengeance before that happened and some of the things that Mossad was, of course, was saying about America and whatnot. So there's got to be a lesson in this somewhere. How deep does the United States want to get into this? I mean, I guess we're already knee deep into it. That's the answer. When you're knee deep in a swamp, you're right there in the middle, but you're not sure what's on the north side. But you know, if you go back to the south side, okay, if I can just make it to the south side, I'm safe. So do we just completely pull out of there eventually and go in the direction back home? Or do you just keep pushing further into that terrain, hoping to annihilate these people that just don't value human life at all? It's a valid question. Should the United States pull out of this thing completely? 800-259-5791. 800-259-5791. All right, I said we would do odds and ends. So some of the things that happened that you might not have known about, we're going to talk about that next. Some things that have been happening around the United States, including what the Ohio governor is dealing with, delaying executions after this ruling. And then there's the man that's guilty of murdering the Georgia boy, Sad, in the trailer park. And a couple of other things that are interesting, including the struggle over health care. What's the latest there? We'll tell you about that. All next, Round the Bend here on ATN.
Before you throw away your used batteries, you need to listen to this. Now, going green can save money. Go green and save money by giving life to your used batteries by charging them with the Renaissance Charger. The Renaissance Charger uses a new revolutionary battery charging technology that effectively extends the life of new batteries and gives new life to used batteries. Invented by legendary audio genius John Bedini, this unique and patented charging system rejuvenates the electrochemical plate structure in the battery without additives, increasing capacity capacity and maintaining cell integrity. Renaissance Charge offers a full line of products made in the USA for all types and sizes of batteries. Find out why our customers tell us the Renaissance Charger is the only battery charger they will ever use. Save your money. Save the environment. Visit us online at r-charge.com. That's r-charge.com or call us at 208-772-4514. That's 208-772-4514. Be a part of the revolution today.
eCigarettesNational.com would like to introduce an alternative to smoking regular cigarettes to all GCN listeners. It's called the e-cigarette. It looks, feels, tastes, and delivers nicotine like a regular cigarette. But because this is not a cigarette, you don't have to worry about more than 3,900 toxic chemicals and tar entering your body. There's no flame, so there's no risk of fire, and has no dangerous secondhand smoke, so it's safe for the people around you, and will save you right around 50% of over smoking regular cigarettes. So, get rid of the ashtrays, the smell, and the smoke. Learn more by visiting eCigarettesNational.com. That's the letter E, CigarettesNational.com. eCigarettesNational.com. And use coupon code GCN and receive 10% off your order. Or call 1-888-329-7064. 1-888-329-7064 today. To purchase, you must be 18 or older.
If you're looking for a company that will meet and exceed your water purification needs, you need to visit PureWaterFreedom.com. If you're concerned about contaminants in your water, such as fluoride, chlorine, pharmaceutical drugs, arsenic, and even iron or rust, PureWaterFreedom.com has a water purification system perfect for your home or office. PureWaterFreedom.com carries state-of-the-art water filters for every application, including countertop, undersink, shower and bath, whole house, ultraviolet sterilizers, fluoride filters, and reverse osmosis systems that remove fluoride and pharmaceutical drugs, and much more. Installation takes moments, so you'll be enjoying crisp, clean, satisfying water in no time. Not sure which water purification system will work best for you? Log on or call today to speak with a water purification specialist. Call 1-866-757-7644. That's 1-866-757-7644. Or visit purewaterfreedom.com. Purewaterfreedom.com. The best filtered water in the world.
Let me see what spring is like on Jupiter Mars. In other words, hold my hand. In other words, darling, kiss me.
How can you interrupt Diana Krall? I know I say that at least a couple times a week when we play her, but I love her stuff. She's got a bunch of, if you ever go to, you know, Barnes & Noble or whatever and you pick through the CDs, look through her stuff. She's married to Elvis Costello, and she's just got the jazz sound down right, and then some. I think she could do other kinds of music as well, much like Elvis Costello, who's multi-talented. That's my music tip. For whatever it's worth, here on America's Night, this show anyway. Hey, we don't have Matt or Donovan with us back at the mothership in Minneapolis. We have somebody new. Ottman is with us because I think Matt skipped out and went to go see the Vikings beat the Green Bay Packers. I just have a feeling. I know he was dealing with something else that was going on with his car, but I have a sneaking suspicion that he got a ticket to that game because I heard some were available. Ottman, what do you think? Do you think he was sitting there in the cheap seats with somebody else from the network, perhaps?
I think he's more of the type to go out to the bars with his buddies.
So he might have just been watching it on a bar screen somewhere.
Yeah, that's my thought.
All right, well, we're happy that you're here to pitch in and help us on the little show that could. Are you having fun so far?
You know what? Thanks, Kate.
That's all we care about, is that the people back at the mothership feel as though they are tethered to this little satellite studio in Dallas, Texas. He probably didn't get them, because every time I send food up there, somebody always pilfers it. I guess all of you guys can relate to that listening to this show. You know, when somebody brings in donuts and and they walk in and they say, oh, I have 2 dozen donuts. I brought them in from Krispy Kreme, and they're in the break room. And everybody looks and says, oh, no, I'm on a diet. Oh, I ate too much wings yesterday watching the game. And then a half an hour later, not even, every single donut in the place is gone. I think that happens at GCN. I just
have a feeling.
We don't
get donuts here at GCN.
No? Pizza?
Nothing.
Nothing. Seeds? Did you get some of those free survivalist seeds?
That's funny. I actually did get some free survivalist seeds.
There you go. So you can't complain. You got something, right? If you're starving, you have the seeds. I guarantee people can relate to what we're saying here. All right, I said I was going to talk about a couple of quick things and fill in the blanks on some, including this one. This is a kind of lighter fare, but it made huge news. And David Letterman, the king of the wisecrackers and sarcasm, really has had to eat it, although he doesn't seem as though that he's completely uncomfortable with the fact that he's just coming clean with the whole deal. But Letterman apologized to his wife, Regina Lasko, during the taping of Monday's late show, and he said she's been horribly hurt by his behavior. I don't mean to laugh, but it just this happened last week, too. It came out. What happened was, on Thursday, he said that he had a sexual relationship, or in fact, several relationships, with women who worked for him, and that he'd been the victim of an alleged $2 million blackmail threat. So that happened on Thursday, so you can imagine heading into the weekend what that was like. And it was very awkward. The studio audience was waiting for sort of like a punchline or something. It just seemed so odd when he dropped that, and a lot of people were unaware of what he was talking about because he had to go down to court and testify or something over this guy trying to blackmail him. So obviously it was going to come out. The guy had worked on 48 Hours. He was a producer for them. And his girlfriend was fooling around with David Letterman. That's it in a, or his ex-girlfriend was fooling around with David Letterman. That's it in a nutshell. And then apparently there were some others. So the saga continues. He apologizes to the wife. Oof, ugly, awkward stuff. And for somebody who makes his living kind of picking the bones off of other people's awkward moments, humiliations or trials and tribulations, that had to be just a double whammy for him when he had to come back and, or did come back and apologize to his wife. And trust me, the end of this is not done because a lot of people are trying to figure out who the women were. You know, we live in the era of tabloid TV. So the TMZs, I mean, they're going to go after this story like, a buzzards flying around in the desert, desperate to pick any carcass clean they can. They will pick this story clean. I mentioned the Ohio execution that was stopped. Here's what happened, if you haven't heard the story. A federal appeals court decided to stop the execution of an inmate 3 weeks after this problems with the lethal injection attempt. Ooh, is that ugly. And this is when people start to argue that this is why we shouldn't have the death penalty. You know that I am a strong proponent, much to the chagrin of many people who listen to the show, and some people in my family who don't understand why I'm for the death penalty, but I am. So a panel of the 6th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in Cincinnati ruled 2-1 to grant the request of the 43-year-old who they were trying to inject, Lawrence Reynolds Jr. He was sentenced to death. Here's what he did. He strangled his 67-year-old neighbor. Is that not awful? During a 94 robbery. So here's the thing. What about the family of the man in his golden years? How are they feeling about this? So first you have the neighbor robbing you, strangling to death the father, grandfather. Then you go through the court process. He gets the death penalty and the state botches the administration of the lethal drug. So now they have a hold on his sentence. They struggled, though, for 2 hours to find a usable vein. So finally the governor had enough of it and stopped it. And what's awful is family members were there. So it's already a very weird, twisted thing for people to deal with. And can you imagine sitting behind the glass for 2 hours while that's happening? Then you now sort of have this this stay, really, or the halting of the execution. So it's not happening right now. This was a second execution attempt, and what they're saying is his attorneys, because they're going to have this federal court hearing in November, they're saying that it is an unprecedented second execution attempt and that it violates a constitutional ban on cruel and unusual punishment. So with the questions about the lethal injection procedure, you wonder if this could be precedent setting perhaps in the future for other states and other situations like that. But depending on what the court rules, imagine the family getting dragged through this again. Now, the governor's decision to stop the execution, as far as I know and could find anywhere, it's unprecedented since capital punishment was declared constitutional. And, of course, the execution started back up, as you remember, in the 70s again. Inmates in a lot of states have experienced some kind of delays with an injection or, with the chemicals, etc., but they always happened the same day. This is the first time that this has happened, the vein problem, and the governor saying, forget it. Like I said, because I'm a proponent of it, and I think what he did was horrendous and heinous and just sad, the family now just gets dragged through it even more. Goes through the process. Who knows what happens as a result of that. And finally, let's update you quickly on this, because it seems like we're always talking sadly about fires in California, and firefighters did make some progress. They had that wildfire I was telling you about in that Southern California mountain area, pretty town called Wrightwood. So they evacuated thousands of people there. There was just a little bit of flame, I guess, that's still burning in about a 12-square-mile area. That's the good news. It's the San Gabriel Mountains. If you wanted a picture in your mind, well, where are the San Gabriel Mountains? You're probably talking about 40 miles northeast of downtown L.A. So you got smoldering, pretty much what you're seeing is smoldering stuff and a little bit of flame here and there. But they had wacky winds they were dealing with when they first started fighting this sucker. 6 miles an hour up to 50 miles an hour. So it would just fluctuate back and forth, back and forth. But, they're telling the firefighters, don't get too comfortable because we can't let our guard down. There might be a shift or an increase in the winds. You could get the flames that would come back up again. We don't know. Containment up to 30% on Monday. I guess that's the good news. Let's hope that the winds don't kick up in any of those canyons, and especially in that San Gabriel Mountain area where that town is. Boy, it's been a rough year for wildfires, probably one of the worst for California. Any thoughts on the show? You can flip me an email, americatonight.net.